Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we're going to be exploring if there is such a thing as too much exercise during pregnancy. It's common knowledge that you should stay active while expecting. Walking, swimming, and doing prenatal yoga can all be super helpful, but what about bar, CrossFit, and weightlifting? Deb Flaschenberg has answers. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Bloom's Hug Me Deodorant, a deodorant with probiotics that keeps you feeling fresh and super huggable. Go to bloom.com/birthful for 25% off your first stick of Hug Me Deodorant and free shipping. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Vistaprint, with up to 50% off all holiday cards and photo calendars, plus great deals on photo gifts. Go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code BIRTHFUL50 before January 5th. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. As always, thank you so very much for all the love you give this show and for telling your friends about it and you're telling your clients about it, telling any pregnant person that you see about it. If what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. It's also free. You can also support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which for this week, in this week's case, are Bloom's Hug Me Deodorant and Vistaprint. And let's not forget, you can also become an official Birthful patron at patreon.com/birthful. And as a thank you, patrons get access to the extra content that I create for each episode, as well as access to ad-free episodes. For this episode, that means a special companion handout that includes the suggestions and exercises mentioned by Deb. You can join us at patreon.com/birthful. Now, I've got a super duper extra fabulous, wonderful announcement for you today, which is that the podcast is turning five. It's been 5 years of doing this on a weekly basis. And to celebrate this incredible milestone, we're going to have a month-long celebration starting December 26th. And basically, it's just going to run through the month of January. There's going to be giveaways, special guests, and more. And the special guests are going to be in videos. The podcast is just going to do its podcast thing, but we're going to have like events around it in other places in social media. So stay tuned for details in the coming weeks. As part of the preparations, though, I would like to know who have been your favorite guests on the podcast. I have set up a post on my Facebook and Instagram where you can tell me the answer. Go let me know about it. All right. So today's topic is one that has been on my mind for quite a while. And ever since I was at a birth where a baby was crowning for a long time and the caregiver made a frustrated comment about, quote, these yoga people with their tight perineums, end quote. And at the time, I was kind of appalled. Well, because the way she said it was not so supportive for the mom that was trying so hard to get her baby out. But the comment did stick with me. And, you know, birth is a time where your whole body is making space. Think about it. If, you know, even the magnificent hormone relaxin shows up to make sure your joints can be more flexible so that those bones in your pelvis can move and separate at the front to give baby's head more space. So it would follow that having muscles and ligaments that were too tight could hinder that process. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Deb Flaschenberg is here to help me learn more and get deep into the physiology of what is required for a smoother birth. So welcome, Deb. I am so glad you're here.
Thank you. I am a longtime listener of yours, so it's quite an honor to be on the show.
Ah, it's so exciting. And I love when there's fellow podcasters that come on the show because we have so much passion and like to share, you know, passion for birth and passion for sharing and broadcasting messages. And yeah, I love telling my listeners about other shows. So what's the name of your show?
Yoga Birth Babies.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing it for about 2 years now, right?
Yeah, April will be 2 years.
Yeah. So fabulous. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. What do you do aside from podcasting?
I do a lot.
Right?
Which hat do I go on first? Well, I started the prenatal yoga center in New York City almost 16 years ago. And then just from that journey, flourished into becoming a labor support doula. And then I also became a Lamaze teacher. I did the midwifery assistant program down at the farm. And then years after accumulating all that birth knowledge, I had my kids. So I have a 6 and a half and a 4-year-old. So I have the hat of being the director of the studio, a yoga teacher. I teach teacher trainings all around the country. I write for different blogs as well as my own. So it's all birth advocating. So it all kind of revolves around the same thing, just different roles.
No, and it's lovely, and it's not only that. Like once you get into what, however, whatever was the gateway that brought you to birth work or birth related information, you just want to help more and more. And I find myself in the same situation, right? I started just with birth doula, and then progressed to doing sleep consultations and postpartum education classes, and then the podcast, and it just so enriching to the soul.
It is, and it's all based on the one idea of like, how can we help? And I feel you're in the same boat of this. How can we help women have a really exciting, or not exciting, because some people don't find it exciting, but just autonomy and empowered birth that they can own and have it feel a positive experience throughout their life. And I think all these different venues that you and I do are just trying to support that.
Yeah. And maybe this was your experience as well, but it wasn't until I became a mom that I realized how insanely difficult and like earthquake shattering becoming a mom is, like to your identity, to your life, to all the things, like how much it asks of you. And now I find we're starting to hear more about it. But, my daughter just turned 13. When she was itty bitty, this was not the talk. And I think a lot of people out there still don't know, right?
Yeah, sometimes I actually have to catch myself with my prenatal students that don't have kids pulling back, so I don't want to scare them. But yeah, I feel like we don't talk about it. It's hard to have it all, and something has to give, at certain points. And it's an ebb and flow of what's getting more attention. But yeah, I don't think I fully understood the weight and responsibility of motherhood, even though I had been working in that field for almost 10 years. Before having my own kids. But then all of a sudden, that responsibility of motherhood and so much giving, and then family and supporting that and running a business, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's too
Love it, but it's a
much.
lot.
Yeah,
It's too
it's
much.
too much. That idea that you're going to have it all. I love how what we're going to talk about today, which is can exercise during pregnancy make labor harder? How that sort of parallels what you're doing with your what needs to happen in your physical body and what makes more of a difference for your physical body is kind of parallel to what needs to happen to your mind.
Yeah, there needs to be a surrender to both and
Exactly.
acceptance and also a social acceptance. I know we're going to talk about like exercise and kind of the body image. And I think there's this image that many of us take on, like, oh, I'm pregnant, but I'm only going to change in my belly and boobs, not let anything else change, because that's like this Hollywood image. And then we also have this Hollywood image of what moms can do, which is supposedly everything. So I think we kind of have to surrender and take the mask off a bit.
Yeah. So let's talk about that physical part of, we're always being told that you need to move and exercise and keep active while pregnant, that that is helpful for labor, which it is. But it's also happening in a bubble right now where there's a lot of obsession with fitness. And so, how do, what are the benefits of exercising during pregnancy first, and then we'll get into like what should that exercising look like?
Sure. So I think exercising is fantastic. Now, clearly, I've been a prenatal yoga teacher for 16, 17 years, actually prenatal, and a yoga teacher for 18, and an avid exerciser and prior dancer. So clearly, I support exercise. It's amazing for keeping the aches and pains at bay during pregnancy. It's a great release of endorphins, especially for prenatal. I think coping skills and learning breathing are all going to benefit some sort of labor, whether it's a vaginal or cesarean, still having the coping skills and the breathing. So I think it's incredibly important. But what I think sometimes happens is we often hear this common saying of, oh, if you did it before, you can absolutely keep doing what you were doing during pregnancy. And I think that's where we start to get a little bit misaligned with how can exercise help create a more of a functional birth. So keep exercising, but do it mindfully. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I absolutely, and I think when we used to have this sort of mantra of if you are doing it before, you can continue doing it while pregnant, there was always the caveat of, but like, don't horseback ride or do things that are jerky and jump, no trampoline jumping. Like, there were a little bit of things that people weren't
Yeah, but it goes
widespread.
further. I think it needs to be explored further.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, when this was being said, there wasn't that widespread idea of boot camps and fit, doing weights and lifting. Like, all of that was not what everybody was doing then.
Right, it wasn't quite the trend. And this trend of like the boot camps and the bar class and even the spinning, it's relatively new in terms of what we think of, exercise. If you think back, even like the 80s where there's kind of Jane Fonda, and I think in the 80s and 90s there was like step class. And then spin really, I mean, I might not be totally on par with this, but I think it's maybe like 2000, a little later, that spin, and then bar classes maybe like 15, 10 years ago. So these things are relatively new and very tightening for the body, which is not helpful.
Right. And that's why I thought it was so important that you reach out and we're talking about this today, because not that we're knocking weight training and cross training and all that. It has its place. It's just that we're seeing moms that are really doing that before and during pregnancy having a harder time with labor and postpartum because of it.
Absolutely. And I'll out myself. I was that crazy person. I was the person on my spin bike 5 days a week, pregnant. In fact, I had my clothes to go on. I had my gym clothes to head to the gym for, I think it was like a 9 a.m. spin class when I started labor. And I thought, if my contractions go away, I'll make the 10 o'clock. Because of my obsession, I'll call it that, a little obsession with, can I keep this body physique that I was doing before. It really made my labor so much more difficult and my postpartum. And it was that kind of turning point for me of having been through it myself and seen the detriment of continuing to that extent that I really start to change the way I approach how I teach yoga and just the methodology to help women have a better birth. Because one thing that was really hard is if it's a really long birth process and the healing process is harder, and all of a sudden you're a new mom. You don't want your body and your pelvic floor and your abs to be the main focus. You want to be able to focus on, creating this relationship with your child and breastfeeding and enjoying it. And because I was so hardcore before, it really became a stressor that I was seeing a PT twice a week and I was doing all these pelvic floor exercises to try to help kind of rebuild myself. And the labor was really arduous and it created a lot of fear about heading into my second labor. And I want women not to have that. And what was really interesting was I was working with a home birth midwife. I was working with a very well-established doula and an OB. I had a huge team. And no one ever said, hey, Deb, let's look at what you're doing exercise-wise, and maybe we need to look and refine it. And so that's why I'm so passionate about, exercise is great, but are we exercising in a way that's going to help or hinder the birth experience?
Absolutely. And that's, why we're talking here today about this topic. But one question I have for you, Deb, because sometimes I hesitate. Like, you were doing all these classes, you were doing your spinning. If somebody would have told you, wait, hold on, you're doing too much, would you have listened though?
That's a great question. And I don't know, but what I do think if someone said, hey, Deb, if you do this, it may actually make your birth harder. I think then I would have listened. If someone said, oh, don't worry about gaining some weight, I probably wouldn't have. But if they wanted that, if they put that magic piece of, do you want your birth to be harder? And again, what woman's like, yeah, give me the hard birth. I think that would have made the difference. And that's why I say this to people, like, you don't want your birth harder. You don't want your postpartum harder. So I think had that been highlighted, I think it would have.
Good. So hopefully those out there listening who do a lot of exercise are not being put off by this topic, but rather listening with an open mind and curiosity to see how they can improve their situation to actually have that better birth, because that's the point of it. We all want to have an easier, smoother birth. So how would exercising during pregnancy make labor more difficult?
Oh, there are so many ways. So let's jump in. So first of all, we want to make sure that we want a balanced pelvis, because a balanced pelvis is going to make more of a balanced uterus. So there's so many exercise things that can create imbalance in the pelvis. So let's start with the psoas muscle. So those that don't know, it's a muscle that goes from T12, your thoracic 12, kind of down along the lumbar. It runs behind the uterus and attaches to the lesser trochanter, the femur, kind of that upper thigh bone. It's responsible for, a lot of people call it the hip flexor. So it will bring your legs up and down, like spinning or running. You can imagine the thigh bone kept lifting and lifting and lifting, and that's the psoas tightening. So things like spinning and running, a lot of these barre classes where they're doing these huge bump monts, huge kicks, all that's tightening the psoas. And when we tighten the psoas, if you can imagine, it runs behind the uterus, and we're trying to keep the uterus balanced. If it torques the uterus, that's going to prevent baby to find optimal fetal position as well as descend. So we want baby to be able to kind of descend and corkscrew down. But if a tight psoas is preventing that, baby may not descend. Baby may start to get more stuck or just never really hit optimal position. So tight psoas, which many people have, whether they're even athletes or just more of a sitting person, sitting also brings the psoas in a tightened position. So we really want to be mindful of a tight psoas. I hope I explained that well enough to be able to visualize
Yeah. No,
this.
yeah, absolutely. So, what are some things to do to have a more relaxed, less tight, or balanced psoas?
There's fantastic yoga positions. There's also the Webster technique. I don't know. I'm sure you know about that chiropractic technique. I remember with my own second labor pregnancy, I went to my chiropractor around week 36 and going once a week after that. And she had me this interesting exercise where I brought my arms over my head. And because my right arm was, it came up slightly shorter than my left, she's like, "Oh, your right psoas is shorter or tighter." I'm like, you can tell that from bringing my arms overhead. So I did a lot of the Webster technique, but Gail Tully and Spinning Babies also has some psoas releases. But yoga, we do a lot of very mindful psoas relaxing. Also, the interesting thing about the psoas is it's so prone to stress. So if we're creating stress and anxiety, it's also going to kind of clench up. So we want to keep the psoas well stressed and try to keep it kind of supple and juicy.
Very good. Now, I do want to continue with what are the other things that you can do, or what are exercises that, make things more difficult? But before we do that, let's take a quick break. Trying natural deodorants one after another to have none of them work can get really frustrating. I get it. But when I learned that the Hug Me deodorant by Bloom, that's Blume, is made with probiotics, I just had to give that a try. I mean, probiotics in your deodorant? That's mind-blowing. The probiotics in Hug Me encourage your body to make more good bacteria, and as a result, your body produces less bad bacteria, so BO doesn't exist. Super simple. Hug Me deodorant lasts for 24 hours and does not have to be reapplied throughout the day. And even better, it leaves you with no smell, no sweat stains, and it doesn't just mask the odor. The Hug Me deodorant is a product that lives up to its hype. It has tons of verified 5-star customer reviews at Bloom's website, which is blume.com. And Hug Me has been rated as the best deodorant ever by the New York Post. Many mainstream antiperspirants contain aluminum, which gets absorbed into the bloodstream and has been linked to cancer. By contrast, Hug Me deodorant is aluminum and paraben-free, and it also has no added fragrance. You can try Hug Me risk-free because it comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee or your money back. While you're there at the website, check out Bloom's other safe, sustainable self-care products, including face wash and organic pads and tampons. Hug Me by Bloom keeps you feeling fresh and super huggable. Right now, our listeners will get 25% off their first stick and free shipping when you go to bloom.com/birthful. That's bloom.com/birthful for 25% off your first stick and free shipping. And if you don't love it and feel amazing when you wear it, just return it for a full refund. No questions asked. blume.com/birthful. And we're back talking with Deb Flaschenberg about can exercise during pregnancy make labor harder? So we talked about the needing a balanced pelvis because it balances the uterus, and you talked about the psoas muscle. Are there other things that help balance the pelvis?
Yeah, we also want to be mindful of the piriformis. So I'm throwing a lot of anatomy out there. So I hope some people, those that are already into yoga and birth, probably know a lot of these. So also a tight piriformis. So that's a deep rotator muscle. It goes from the sacrum and it runs to the greater trochanter, the femur, kind of the outer thigh bone. And when it's tight, that can pull the SI joint, the sacroiliac joint, out of alignment. So if you think about the pelvis, we've got the two big hip bones and then the sacrum connecting it in the back. When those are out of alignment, it can create a harder time for the baby to descend. But if we want to think of the outlet of the pelvis, if the sacrum's pushing into it, the baby's head can actually get caught on that rim. So if we have this tight piriformis and it's pulling on the sacrum, that can create misalignment. So when we hear about these women that are having these really long labors and things are just moving really slowly or stall out, it's usually baby position. So tight piriformis is another of those causes of the pelvis being out of balance. And that happens with so many pregnant women because if we think about the S curve of the spine, when we get that deeper lumbar curve, and we've all seen the pregnant women start to waddle, the feet turn out, that's creating that tighter piriformis. One of the biggest culprits, bar classes. It's all about external rotation, all sorts of leg lifts, keep squeezing the glutes. Anything we're overly squeezing is making it tight. And tight doesn't mean it's strong, it just be tight. So we want to be really mindful. So there's a few exercises in yoga that we do, but if someone's not interested in yoga, a really easy one to do at home is if you take a tennis ball and you put it in, you sit on it and kind of push it into the glute and roll around on it, there's usually kind of this deep, tight, kind of burning spot that the tennis ball can help release, or a massage. Massage is another great way to try to release the piriformis. I've had some massage therapists get their elbows in there and kind of dig around to try to release that. But a lot of people have a tight piriformis. But again, all these over-tightening things, because we're doing, a lot of these exercises we talked about are relatively new, we think we're creating this strength. We're actually creating too much tightness.
Yeah. And the best way I have to explain that, and more specifically, is with Kegels, right? There's this idea of Kegels.
Yes, I mean that's so right. If exactly, you can't have it, too tight, too short. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about how to Let me teach you how to even find if you have a tight pelvic floor. So if you're sitting and you want to try to massage, uh-oh, sorry, my daughter just came in. Can we
Oh,
pause for a
yeah, we
second?
can.
So.
And your cox now your
Pubic
front bone, pubic bone there. I'm like
bone.
the one in the front. The pubic bone, which you that's where the baby is going to come through. So you actually want that space to be able to open up wide, and you by tightening and doing Kegels, you're just making it tighter, like a difficult, more difficult door to get through.
Absolutely. And Kegels often are just, people just think of Kegels like you said, squeezing. But one way it's often described is squeeze if you're stopping the flow of urine. But that's just the urethra sphincter. That's really just the front. If we're really squeezing everything, that's even worse. So if someone needs pelvic floor work, we want to create balance. You are totally right that we don't want to just tighten, tighten, tighten. We actually want to create, I think of the pelvic floor kind of like a springboard. It should be bouncy. That you want to have a toned muscle that has given flexibility. We don't want a muscle that's so shortened and tight that it can't stretch. And we don't want a muscle that's so long and flaccid it can't support. Your pelvic floor really needs to have, it's like a shock absorber. So if you think about the whole pelvic bowl and that's the springy foundation, every time someone walks or sneezes or coughs, there's a downward pressure of the pelvic organs. And we want it to kind of spring back up and support, not just tighten. Another thing that can happen with an overly tight pelvic floor is that it can create a harder time pooping, which is then going to can cause hemorrhoids. That can cause, the more someone strains, it can also cause incontinence for someone if they're too tight. So it really needs to be balanced. And yeah, the idea of just tighten, tighten, that's really a fallacy. A lot of women are actually hypertonic. They don't need more tightening. They actually need to learn to relax the pelvic floor.
Oh yeah, let's talk into how you can do that. And as you were talking about the pelvic floor having it be like a bouncy springboard, I was thinking you want your Goldilocks pelvic floor. It's just right, not too soft, not too hard, just right.
Yes, I mean, that's so right. Not too tight, not too loose, perfectly springy. So, a few ways that we can actually stretch the pelvic floor. So, first, I'm going to even teach you to figure out, do you even have a tight or loose pelvic floor? There's a few ways. One, you can actually palpate your own pelvic floor. So, if you can find your sit bones, the ischial tuberosities, those bones in which you're sitting upon, and if you start to massage kind of the inner ridge or inside the sit bone towards the perineum, if it's tender, and it hurts when you're pressing on it, it's too tight. If you can kind of palpate all through there and nothing, you're probably more balanced or hypotonic. Another way someone can tell is incontinence can happen with a tight and a relaxed pelvic floor. Most people think, oh my God, I'm having incontinence, let's just Kegel more. And sometimes that's making it worse. So the kind of general understanding is if you are sneezing or laughing or coughing or jumping or running around and you have some incontinence, you're probably hypotonic and need a little, and that's stress incontinence, you need a little more support. But if you're having what's called urge incontinence, where people just don't make it to the bathroom on time, that's usually associated with a tight, short muscle where it's almost spasming. So that's a hypertonic. So some people that are having that, they're like, oh no, I'm leaking, I'm going to Kegel more. And then they're just shortening and tightening the muscle. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and I did not know
There's
this.
different kinds.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that you could, you know, in my mind, it was just like if you're having incontinence and you can't make it to the bathroom, then, or you're like, you sneeze and stuff comes out, that it's too loose. You got to tighten things up.
Yeah. And so we want to also talk about how to actually do pelvic floor balancing. So to stretch the pelvic floor is a few really easy ways. And the first really easy way I teach, if someone's kind of new to it, it's just deep diaphragmatic breathing. So when you breathe, if you're doing normal respiration, when you inhale, your lungs expand, your respiratory diaphragm, which is kind of like a dome, I think of it like a jellyfish, it drops and spreads, and then there's slight downward pressure of the pelvic organs on the pelvic floor, and that creates a spreading and widening of the pelvic floor. Then when you exhale, your lungs empty, your respiratory diaphragm domes back up, and it creates like a little vacuum, and it lifts the pelvic organs and creates like a dome in the pelvic floor. So the pelvic floor and pelvic diaphragm should move together. They should both inhale and drop and spread, and exhale, there's a natural lift. So if someone can focus on a deep, relaxed diaphragmatic breathing way to the pelvic floor, just that natural downward pressure, not you're forcing it, you're not trying to like press anything or bulge the pelvic floor, but just deep diaphragmatic breathing should start to create a little bit of length in the muscles. So that's one really simple way that everyone can do. Everyone can breathe. The
Yeah.
problem that happens, yeah, I mean, everyone can do, you can do it driving your car, you can do it sitting on the subway. The problem that some of these, as we're talking about going back to exercise, some of these things that we're constantly hearing in things like bar class, and I heard this in many, yoga classes that I haven't really enjoyed some of the instruction, it's navel to spine, navel to spine. Or people teach themselves to hold their abdomen all the time. So they're creating that intra-abdominal pressure, which is putting pressure on the pelvic floor. So when we hear like, okay, only breathe up in the upper chest, you're losing the opportunity to get some natural stretch of the pelvic floor. So we're creating more tightness from trying to create this image of like, I'm going to keep my belly always in.
Yeah. And when you breathe up on your lungs all the time, you're actually telling different signals to your nervous system. It's actually more stressful.
Yeah, we're in that fight or flight all the time, which we know is not good. We don't need to
No.
run on, we'd run on adrenaline enough. We don't need to run on adrenaline and, while we're just working on breathing. So another way, if someone's into yoga, the idea of like something like in down dog, lifting and spreading the sit bones, or a forward fold, lifting and spreading the sit bones, so that again you create some length. Because a lot of times, again, we think Kegels just squeeze the vaginal muscles, but we want to be able to think of kind of that whole diamond shape of the pelvic floor, having the ability to stretch between the sit bones from pubis to tail. So if someone's actually needing support, just squeezing the urethral sphincter is really not doing it. I think, again, kind of the pelvic floor like a dome, that if you were to have to tone, you do it on the exhales. The inhale is to stretch and release, but the exhale, we're thinking of drawing your sit bones together, drawing your pubis and tail, and trying to dome and lift the perineum. So you're not just squeezing as if you're stopping from peeing. So it's a little, it's a different balance than just, oh, I got to squeeze, I got to squeeze. It's an inhale to stretch and an exhale to engage. And engage is different than just squeeze.
Right, right. Engaging is just, you know, sensing movement towards, it's not like, oh, as hard as I can.
Yeah, we don't want to go for like, oh, I'm going to squeeze everything in. We're probably overdoing it. So yeah, we want to be able to have, again, go back to this jellyfish idea in my mind, like you can visualize the undulation, like the inhale, it drops and spread, the exhale, it lifts and domes. And so we're engaging, we're creating muscle work, but we're not just squeezing, squeezing, squeezing until we're blue in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tight pelvic floor is not helpful for birth.
What do you think about squats and squats done, you know, properly?
Let's talk about squats.
Yeah, let's talk about squats. You know, with you, making sure your knees are don't go in front of your toes, and that your feet are not, you know, angled out but parallel, and that you go down and don't lift your heels, goes down as far, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if as long as the heels are supported, you hit something huge about that the feet are parallel. Mm. Because a lot of people are going to start squatting, turning their toes out in an external rotation. And that's actually taking the sit bones closer together. So that's actually shortening the muscles, as well as creating less space if someone wants to use this for birth, you know, a birthing position. I think squats are fine. The thing we have to be really mindful is if we understand baby position, because when we squat parallel, we're opening the outlet of the pelvis. If a baby's breech, I wouldn't want to shove the presenting part that may not, you know,
the feet or whatever.
Yeah. Because if, you know, maybe they have a provider that's going to deliver a breech, but here in New York City, we don't have too many. So I'd want to understand the position of the baby, but it's a great pose to stretch the pelvic floor. And it's a great pushing pose because it does open the outlet of the pelvis more than, you know, birthing on your back.
Mm. And what I like about the squats is, like, if done properly and having checked that it's appropriate for you, is that I feel like talking to about this inhale, relax, exhale, engage that you've mentioned, that when you go down, if you're sticking out your sit bone, right, not tucking, but really sticking it out, then you're, as you go down, you're opening, and as you go up, you're tightening or engaging.
Toning, engaging, yeah. And that's the other thing. You totally hit on the head there, that many people squat and they tuck their tailbone. And so if you look around, ever since I've been studying the pelvic floor, people are now going to know my secret. I look at people's postures, feet and tailbone. And when you see a really tucked tailbone, they're probably a really hypertonic pelvic floor. So if we tuck the tailbone, we're creating more of that tightness. So you're absolutely right. Kind of swing the tailbone back and think of widening the sit bones. So I think that's right.
So I think we've gone into very specifically, like, the parts of the pelvic floor, and, you know, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about how to take that into your exercise practice and what you're already doing and what other exercises to do to avoid, like, it more from a broader point of view, not just so narrow into a specific position or exercise. We'll be right back. So Annika was really into creating her own holiday photo this year, and she even re-dyed her hair bright red for it and recruited her dad to take the picture, planned it for the weekend, knowing exactly what she wanted as the background. So to get the cards done, all I had to do was choose a layout design and order the cards. Between her and Vistaprint, coordinating and printing this year's holiday cards has been a breeze for me. And I know that people are going to be thrilled to get something so thoughtfully created by her. Whatever reaction you're looking for this holiday, you can spread more joy with custom holiday cards, calendars, and photo gifts from Vistaprint. Creating your meaningful card with Vistaprint takes no time at all. First, you pick a shape like square or rounded corners, folded or flat, and then choose one of Vistaprint's designs. They do have everything from fun and festive to gorgeous and elegant looks. Next, you can put your favorite picture or pictures right there on most of the options so you can see what it looks like, and even upload the shot right from your phone. Then just figure out how many you need and order them with time to spare. To make my life even easier, I also ordered envelopes that will perfectly fit our card. Vistaprint also has custom calendars for gifts that keep giving all year round, and all custom cards and calendars are up to 50% off right now. So this season, make more merry at Vistaprint.com with up to 50% off all holiday cards and photo calendars, plus great deals on photo gifts at Vistaprint.com. Just enter the promo code BIRTHFUL50. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code BIRTHFUL50. Offer expires January 5th. And we're back talking with Deb Flaschenberg about exercising during pregnancy and how some exercises can make your labor harder. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. So you mentioned that stuff like running or cycling, that can tighten the psoas muscle. So clearly that's something to be avoided or balanced with some good, you know, stretching of those, of that muscle. But as a practice in general, are there some exercises aside from running and cycling that, and bar, that should be kind of avoided or lessened, or like weightlifting? What do we think about that?
Weightlifting, it can create, you know, when a lot of people hold their breath when weightlifting and push down on the pelvic floor, I think that's not going to be helpful. That can lead to some prolapse. I also don't think holding your breath when pregnant is a very particularly good idea. We get a lot of professional dancers coming to my studio because we're not far from Lincoln Center. So when we're working with people that are on point, that's also going to be a very tight pelvic floor situation. So we work now, granted that some people, you know, that's what they do, but the further along they get, they shouldn't be jumping and spinning so much. So looking at things like, you know, were you a gymnast? Were you a dancer? You know, are you already very lifted and tight? Those are probably the main things we see. Also, as you mentioned horseback riding before, like, you know, things that are squeezing that the adductors, the inner thighs, that's going to lead to too much tightness. But the main ones I do see around, I would say be mindful of spinning, of running. I know a lot of people do run. I'd start to pull that back a little bit. What's another one? Those are the main ones, and bar classes. And it was interesting. I remember when I was pregnant with my first, and as I mentioned, I was taking crazy spin classes. I had my teacher say to me, she's like, you know, for some reason, all my ladies end up with C-sections. And I'm like, well, that won't be me. But I was so close to it. So I really think, you know, we have to be mindful of how we're overly engaging. And I know you mentioned CrossFit at one point. I'm not very familiar with it, but I do know it's weightlifting to the point of extreme fatigue. So I'd be mindful of something like that. And heavy weightlifting. I was recently reading about, I think it was like 20% of people that still did very heavy weightlifting. That led to a lot of diastasis, which is going to lead to some compromise of the pelvic floor as well.
So explain what a diastasis is.
Oh, sure. So rectus abdominal diastasis, when the rectus abdominal, the front, are no longer connecting because the linea alba, the connective tissue, has lost its integrity. So it needs to have some natural tension. But if we have all this abdominal pressure pushing forward and the rectus are separating, or all the muscles separating, and we lose that integrity, there's a gap. It could be, you know, a small gap, one finger, up to 5-6 fingers. And we need to have the canister of the abdomen well contained. So if we start to create that separation of the abdominal muscles, it can lead to some pelvic floor compromise.
So things like crunches would
don't do those.
Something to completely avoid, because you already have this baby growing and everything, like pushing those muscles to their limit, stretching them out.
Yeah, you know, and I've been to the gym and I see pregnant women do it, and you know, it's not my place to go up and be like, well, you know, by doing those crunches, you can create more problems. But if anyone's ever done any sort of crunch when pregnant, even just like jackknifing up, their belly gets this little point forward. I call it a little shark fin. That's a sign that there's some abdominal separation. Some yoga can cause that problem too. Deep back bends, twists, all that can create some problem with separation of the abdominal muscles. And that also goes back to what you were saying with tight pelvic floor. I forgot to mention that. Yoga. There's a lot of yoga that talks about this thing called Mula Bandha, where it's an engagement of the pelvic floor all the time. You know, so if we're always engaging, we're never going to release. So yeah, if deep back bends, deep twists, crunches, weightlifting. Unfortunately, for second-time moms, we think about, picking up first child, pushing a heavy stroller, trying to pull it up. So we have to be really mindful of how we can better support our bodies.
And I think it's great to let people know that this is not that you're like, oh, take away the shoulds of like, I've been able to do this all the time and now I can't, and feeling less than, or like you're failing because your body is it, really your body's changing so much. You've increased your blood volume 50%. You have relaxing going through your whole body, making you a little more wobbly and more prone to falling, and just looser joints that could create easier injuries. You have to kind of respect where your body is at that moment.
You do, and I think it's really hard. I think, and I've watched this with yogis, and again, I kind of put myself in this category, and dancers and athletes. If someone's worked so long on their craft, whether it be yoga or dancing or their technique of running, and all of a sudden they have to change it, it's really kind of showing I'm changing myself. I'm all of a sudden transitioning. It's like when someone becomes a mom and all of a sudden you have a different identity. And if someone's identified with their yoga practice or their dancing and now they have to give it up, it's really emotionally hard. So trying to find a way to accept surrender and find people that are going to support that surrender. Because I can't tell you how many people congratulated me in spin class, like, you're doing great. You're still on that bike. And it would have actually been helpful for someone to be like, hey, what you doing? It's okay to let it go. It's going to be there after. I think we're just so hard on ourselves.
So if you do have a tight perineum and tight muscles, what are the some of the things that happen during labor and that can make it more difficult? So you did mention like failure to progress, which is a nice
That's a
enormous umbrella, right?
big one. That's a big one. So if the pelvis is misaligned and imbalanced, and the uterus is imbalanced, it's going to cause, just a long, slower labor. And not all care providers and hospitals are going to give the time to let baby work itself out. So we can have the uterus is torqued. I'm sure you've heard of intrauterine constraint. So we've got these ligaments that are attached from the uterus to the pelvis. And if the pelvis isn't aligned well, they're pulling on that uterus. So if you can imagine the uterus kind of like a big balloon, and all of a sudden one of the tethers is pulling it out of alignment, so it's no longer even, that's going to have a deeper problem with the way the baby descends and even the alignment of the cervix. So here we are, we're not progressing, even with Pitocin, and things are then, baby's not descending. So the mom's going to start to then get anxious and nervous. And we already talked about the psoas, what happens with, anxiety. It fires it into fight or flight. And then, so say you actually do get baby descended and you're making some progress. And then we have this tight pelvic floor, and maybe it's not even evenly tight. Baby's head could be asynclitic, or as you mentioned, kind of like pushing a door open that's really shut. So mom's finally getting the rotation and the descent, and now she has to hit the pelvic floor and have a rotation for a head to come out. Well, the head's not really rotating as well because that pelvic floor is really tight. Or, you might have a care provider that sees a really tight pelvic floor and says something like, we might have to do an episiotomy, or we might need to have more of an instrumental birth because it's really hard to let that pelvic floor stretch. So it's coming back to balance. We need to be able to have the body a little more, it can be strong, but supple. So yeah, we want to try to have mom have an easier birth. And also think if we're really tight and she's pushing for a long time, that can lead to prolapse. And no one wants to deal with pelvic floor and pelvic organ prolapse postpartum. Again, you don't want her to feel like she's peeing all over herself as she's trying to take care of her baby.
Absolutely. Nobody wants that. And when you were talking about the head, not being able to rotate because of a too tight pelvic floor, it reminded me as well that when you are, or if you're pushing for a long time, this baby's head is then suddenly getting a lot of unwanted forces pushing for, because you're trying to push down and the door is tight at the bottom. And so this little head, this little neck, they're being kind of smooshed and squeezed and yeah.
And then think that's going to do for breastfeeding.
Well, and that's it. It affects everything, right? Because then you might have a baby that has torticollis or that has, needs an adjustment or cranial sacral therapy or something to release those things that we don't think about.
Yeah, and exactly. And some people may be like, oh, cranial sacral, sure. But other people are like, cranial what? Like, that wouldn't even occur to them. And like, why is baby mouth not latching? What's going on with the jaw? Why is the suck too strong, too weak? And then they may give up on breastfeeding.
And then if breastfeeding is what you wanted to do, you feel like a failure.
Yeah, and again, now she's a failure from not breastfeeding, and her pelvic floor is tight, and she's diastasis. I mean, like, we want mom's entrance into this new journey and this new experience to be a welcomed one, not where she's feeling beaten down, you know, and that she just went through this war of labor. You know, so all this is really just to help the pregnant person enter this new phase with a little more ease.
Yeah, and it is a time of ease, of being gentle with yourself. I know that doesn't fit into what we're used to in culturally, of what, you know, this drive that we constantly have. What do you mean I've got to like slow down? But and I feel like I say this to ad nauseum, like, it is so important for you to internalize that and give yourself grace and know that it is okay to be slow, take your time, because your baby actually is going to force you into that slower time. Baby time, everything takes 10 times longer than you think it could.
Like, just getting out the door. I tell my pregnant students that all the time. Like, enjoy the fact, if you want to go get a coffee and bagel, just put your shoes on and walk out the door. It doesn't happen like that once baby's there. You know, now it's a half an hour just to get your shoes on and make sure baby's, you know, hasn't blown out its diaper.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you were mentioning before of the, you know, the possibility of having an episiotomy, because once the baby finally descended and got there, that those muscles were too tight. And I've got to say, as a doula, I have seen that. I have. It's not something that we're hypothesizing here. I don't know if it's been your experience too,
Yeah, there was a moment during my first birth where my home birth midwife, which will tell you doesn't usually go there, said, "Would you want me to cut an episiotomy?" And I literally thought, "Oh my God, when would a home birth midwife offer that?" Clearly, something was not stretching and opening. I didn't end up needing it, but there was a little moment of panic of thinking, why is she offering this? You know, that's not usually where a home birth midwife is going to go. You know, that's not usually part of their repertoire of techniques they use.
No, not at all. Had baby been crowning for quite a bit?
Oh, yes. Very long. And like the crazy, and I think as a doula, you'd appreciate this. I kept asking with every contraction what his heart rate was, because I was concerned, you know, we're crowning for so long. But yeah, it's... Like, tell me his heart rate. Like, do you need to know? I'm like, yes, I do. So, you know, we don't want that for women. Fortunately, I didn't need that. But as you've seen, if it's really tight, the episiotomy is going to cause scar tissue. You know, you can have a deeper tear. We don't want that for women.
No, nobody wants that. Definitely something to be avoided. And so, Deb, let's look forward a little bit more. We've been focusing on the birth, but... And you did mention a little bit of how recovery can be, if you have, like, what is an ideal recovery look like, and how can having too much of a tight pelvic floor, an unbalanced pelvic floor, hinder your recovery?
Well, there could be some prolapse. There can be some pelvic floor prolapse. So if mom was pushing for a really long time, it can cause the organs to release into the pelvic floor, especially if we think about all those ligaments that she has. It's not all the ligaments, the hormones that are creating softness in ligaments. So they're descending anyway. And then when you're pushing for a long time, you have that downward pressure. And if the ligaments overextend, then all of a sudden maybe you're having bladder prolapse or even a little cervical prolapse or rectal prolapse. And then she has to work on healing from that. My own experience and that of many of my students was pelvic floor rehab, you know, and then doing pelvic floor exercises. And it takes a while to get back. And a lot of moms want to, you know, get back on their feet mindfully after. But if all of a sudden focus on, like, how can I support my pelvic floor, it's harder to transition back to regular exercise. So there's pelvic floor stuff that can happen. If her pelvic floor is really tight and she's pushing for a long time, that can also create the diastasis I was talking about. So we don't want mom feeling, again, her body was trashed after. So I think that the transition back to postpartum exercise needs to be slow and mindful, that we don't want to start running and again pounding on that compromised pelvic floor. We want to give time for the body to support it, get back to its normal state.
And how long could that take? Yeah, I know that it's like a really broad question, but
I could be years for some people. Depends on what's going on.
Right. But, you know how we have this horrible postpartum care where before when you're pregnant, we're, you know, asking you to come in every week so we can check things out. And then afterwards, we don't see you for 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Yeah. I know. Isn't it kind of crazy though? Like, so here we are seeing, you know, once a week and then all of a sudden after, like, oh, see you in 6 weeks. And I did some research that that 6 week period is actually the highest occurrence of major situations with the postpartum body happening, like preeclampsia, even cardiac arrest. So it is a little crazy that we have such a gap. But when someone should start exercising again, I think they need to be mindful of their bleeding. Yeah, I've had students come back like 10 days later and I'm like, it's great that you got out of the house, but I can't have you doing this. And if they do, I have them do a restorative class. So we need to be mindful of the bleeding. You know, and for the C-section, that's major abdominal surgery. We need to wait at least 6 weeks. So I say, look at what your body's feeling capable of doing. As you mentioned, like that whole 6 week, very quick meeting with the care provider, usually it's like, okay, you can just jump right back. But when can anyone all of a sudden, the day turns 6 weeks and all of a sudden you're off running again? So I think we need to really pay attention to how does the body feel? What kind of signals is the body giving as opposed to the mind and ego? Like, I need to exercise. I need to get back to pre-pregnancy body. So we need to look at the bleeding. Is there incontinence? Is there a heaviness in the vagina? How does the back feel? How does her own energy feel?
Because you're probably not sleeping that much. You're probably getting not that great of, you know, nutrition unless you're being really mindful and active and have great support around that.
Absolutely.
I'm one of mine that sleep comes before exercising.
Yeah, especially because if you are going to exercise and you're tired, what kind of workout are you really going to get? You're probably better off catching up on your sleep, feeling better, and then having a shorter workout.
Absolutely. And I really love that say that what you just said about listening to your body, not your ego, and just touching in with what's going on, because pregnancy was 9 months where everything changed and you had a baby, and then all those muscles that were stretched really far are all deflated and they need some time to, you know, it's hard to even figure out how to re-engage those sometimes.
And the muscle tone drops. During postpartum, the estrogen drops dramatically. And if someone's breastfeeding, their body's in actually a postmenopausal state of estrogen. It's really low. So muscle tone is decreased. So here someone is, you know, the pelvic floor is having more decreased support. Their body's still changing because if they're breastfeeding, their breasts are huge. There's often fatigue. We really need to be more respectful of that postpartum body. That way, when someone is feeling the energy, they can get back to their workout slowly and mindfully. Because if we go back too early, we're going to injure ourselves. And it's going to take that much longer to get back to what we love.
Yeah, and so much more frustrating. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What other things should people be mindful of or you recommend they pay attention to?
I think they need to pay attention to their posture and, you know, how they're holding their baby. And if they're breastfeeding, it can cause a lot of neck strain. So be really mindful of how, you know, what they're doing in their daily life now that's going to be different, so that they can't just kind of jump right back into life. If their body's different, they're different. Their whole experience is different. And just to be okay with that.
I love it. What are some of your favorite resources around this topic?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Which one to go to?
And you did mention Gail Tully and Spinning Babies, and I will link in the show notes. Yeah.
I'm also a big fan. I have a teacher I've been studying with, Leslie Howard. She is pelvic floor all the way. She's based in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and I've been doing her pelvic floor teacher training, and it's fascinating. I mean, I was already a pelvic floor geek from my own experience, but her work is really great. And I think she has a new book. I think it's called like Pelvic Liberation. So I go a lot to Gail Tully, to Spinning Baby. I check in with Leslie, and then I just keep finding as much research as I can. I have a few PTs that I work with in New York that if I ever have questions, I reach out to them. I feel like they know more than your average care provider, which is also something maybe to keep in mind, that a lot of women just talk to their care provider about what I should and shouldn't do, and even the state of their pelvic floor after, and that's not their specialty. They're not actually trained in that kind of thing. So I would say if someone has some questions of the state of their pregnant body, check with a physical therapist that specializes in women's health. So those are the people I tend to reach out to if I have questions or something's come up that I haven't been able to figure out on my own.
Yeah, and I definitely recommend people to go check out a pelvic floor specialist, even do a check-in while during pregnancy just to see what your baseline is and then to recovery. And I know it sounds excessive, but in France everybody gets this
I was
included
just going
as
to say that. Yeah, I was like, I was going to slip that in. I'm like, well, we're from France. It wouldn't be so excessive because they get 8 weeks of postpartum PT.
Exactly. So it's something that everybody should be doing, and I know that requires a mental shift. But figure out what you can do for you, and like you said, those great diaphragmatic breathing exercises, like those are really a good way to start connecting with your body back afterwards, during postpartum, right?
Yeah, so if someone is during postpartum having some problems with their pelvic floor and they want to start to find some of that pelvic floor toning, I recommend doing it on your back with your hips elevated so that they can have gravity pull the weight of the organs off the pelvic floor so they can start to find those muscles again. So it's not like they're already weight bearing as they then try to find the muscles. I learned that from my PT, and I do that with all my postpartum women.
And this isn't. Go ahead. Sorry.
I lift the pelvis on a block so that they can then have that elevation. And you can do this at home. You can do this as soon as they want to start to feel their pelvic floor again.
Yeah, and I was gonna say that was my question. It was like, but those hips are supported. It's not like they're lifting their hips up on their
Oh
own.
no, yeah, like shove a pillow, shove like two pillows underneath. You don't need a massive height, just a little bit of a height. So one of the things I do with my students is I have them find the pelvic floor first on blocks, then I take them down, then I have them do transverse abdominal exercises to find those muscles again, and then I combine the work. So now they're starting to find some gentle transverse and some gentle pelvic floor, really finding that core again. So not jumping back and trying to do crunches or, lots of plank, really being subtle to get the stability and then move forward into whatever exercise they want to do.
Yeah, and connecting with and that, deep level tissue, like you were saying before, of things that those ligaments that connect the uterus and bring things back.
Yeah, and the problem is a lot of people, when they think abs, they want to get that kind of instant burn, which is more your rectus abdominals, your six pack. But the deep transverse, that's really where it's at about stability and support. So if we can create that support, it's going to help decrease diastasis as well.
I love it. Whew, that has been this is a packed episode. Thank you so much.
I know it's very anatomy based. So those that like anatomy be like, woohoo, we love it. And some might be like, what? What is she talking about?
Well, and no, I mean, anatomy is where it's at. It's physiology. You've got to understand it. The more I learned about the body, the more amazed I am, and the more things make sense of why you wouldn't go, at 6 weeks, let me see if I can get back to lifting some weights. It's like, wait a
Yeah.
second, your Jenga tower, the base is a mess. You can't start putting things up at the top. You got to line that
I love
bottom.
it. Your Jenga tower. That's
Your
awesome.
Jenga tower is a mess. Deb, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been lots of fun. Oh, wait. Oh, I'm saying goodbye. How, if people want to connect with you, how can they do that? Sorry.
No worries. Well, they can check out the podcast, Yoga Birth Babies. But mainly, they can reach me through my website, prenatalyogacenter.com. I've got a blog. We've got online videos. If people that are listening to this are actually yoga teachers and interested in becoming a prenatal teacher, we have, I think, four trainings coming up. So come study with me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want to further support this podcast, then become a Birthful patron at patreon.com/birthful. As a thank you, you'll get the extra content for this episode, which is a special companion handout that includes the suggestions and exercises mentioned by Deb. You also get access to ad-free episodes. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful Patreons, and the wonderful people at Bloom and Vistaprint. For 25% off your first stick of Bloom's Hug Me deodorant and free shipping, go to blume.com/birthful. And go to vistaprint.com and enter the promo code BIRTHFUL50 before January 5th for up to 50% off all holiday cards and photo calendars, plus great deals on photo gifts. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. Now, Deb tells me that most mornings for breakfast, she doubles up on her beverages with tea and coffee and enjoys eggs with steamed veggies and toast. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Lozada.